All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way opening monologue, and I'll remind you guys that Stan McDonald, attorney at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee, he's a 30-year veteran in the practice of law, and oh, by the way, he is the sponsor daily of the Right Side Way monologue. Some of y'all are telling us we got interference on the mics. We're working that out, too, but I got to keep going because we got a clock running, so let me just jump on in to the Right Side Way monologue. So, there's a lot of talk right now about the right sizing of government, about bringing big government into a place of greater efficiency, about making government leaner and more responsive and certainly more responsible. I mean, you got DOGE on the march, you got cutting waste, you got exercising cancerous spending, you got, you know, generally showing us how much government has enjoyed the benefits of our hard-earned tax dollars. Yeah, DOGE, thank you very much. It's galling. At the same time, we're also watching with a bit of morbid fascination as the Trump tariffs are wrecking the globalist view of world commerce by forcing productivity back into the U.S. private sector on U.S. soil. At this point, those who want to make, sell, or buy U.S. goods have a distinct choice. They can offshore the jobs, outsource the productivity, and pay more and make less, or they can view this as an opportunity to invest in America and American workers and American ingenuity. And then there's the stories of government just flat out getting in the way, like Camping World, a major RV retailer who just shut down their operations in one North Carolina city because city officials refused to let them fly a large American flag. Go figure. Or Saks Fifth Avenue in San Francisco, which is shutting down its brick-and-mortar store, which has been in town for nearly 5 decades, because city officials will not curb crime or violence around its doors. Look, whether it be your tax dollars wasted or production capabilities sent overseas or stifling regulations or soft-on-crime policies, the government has a unique skill set that is too often used to crush the private sector. And truthfully, the private sector of our economy is actually what keeps our government going, right? I mean, you would think that the leftists who want more of your time, energy, and money would realize the government is killing the goose that lays the golden eggs when it gets too much in the way of the private sector doing what the private sector does best. Having said all that, I got to tell you about some of the most epic examples of the private sector doing what it does best. I was reminded of a story this past weekend and had to go check it out just to make sure I had my details straight. Yeah, overcoming obstacles with private investment, with sweat equity, with true grit and good old American know-how. Well, the story that I'm about to tell you, it dates back to the 1800s. It dates back to the time when the Alaskan gold rush was taking place. In 1896, gold was discovered in Bonanza Creek near Dawson, which is roughly 50 miles inside the Canadian Yukon Territory. But the best way to get there was through Alaska. Well, when gold was made known, thousands upon thousands of men and women saw riches in their dreams. They gave up everything to become known as stampeders. They stampeded into the wilderness to find gold. But the gold fields, they were in some of the most rugged terrain known to man, and the best way to get there, the only way to get there, was through a frozen man-killer called the Chilkoot Pass. The Chilkoot Trail was roughly 30 miles long. Stampeders, they stormed into Skagway Harbor in southeast Alaska and began making their way overland. The route was considered too treacherous for wagons. It was too tough for even horses and mules. In some places, when the snow melted, men had to crawl uphill on their hands and knees over talus rock and giant boulders. The Canadian government mandated that every man had to have at least 1,500 pounds of supplies to better guarantee they wouldn't die in the wilderness. Okay, well, that meant that the men had to make the trek back and forth multiple times to get the amount of goods they were supposed to have with them when they went into the gold fields. And the last part of that trek was a place called the Chilkoot Pass. It was roughly 1 mile high of pitched climbing while wearing 100 pounds of gear and supplies. And once you made it to the top, you still had to build your own boat and then be prepared to sail it up the high mountain Yukon River to the gold fields. This whole thing was not for the faint of heart. Gear and supplies and bodies littered the trail and can still be found to this day. But the private sector always finds a way, it seems, to increase their productivity. So one group of entrepreneurs decided they were going to cut stairs into the mountain pass. And they did. They cut over 1,500 steps in the snow and ice. And then, of course, they charged people to use them. And they made good money by not even going to the gold fields themselves. They called it the Golden Staircase. You can look it up. And a lot of men and supplies climbed those stairs, and the private sector made a lot of money off of it. But then there was another guy named A.J. Goddard from Seattle. Goddard heard that the gold rush required boats because, you know, like I said, once you got your 1,500 pounds of supplies up through the mountain pass, you still had to get it all downriver again, and everyone was scratch building homemade boats and rafts to try and sail the waters. But A.J. Goddard, he was the ultimate entrepreneur. He saw a way that no one else saw. He ordered two small paddle wheel steamboats to be built and then disassembled. And he shipped all the parts, including the boilers, to Skagway. And he paid to have it all hauled up through the pass on men's backs in small pieces. Trip after trip, his two boats made it up in pieces, and workers spent weeks then reassembling them by hand. And they made it work. His two paddle wheelers plowed the waters back and forth, carrying men and supplies over mountain rapids and lakes. Goddard made good money. And 2 years later, he returned to Seattle and served in the state legislature. It's amazing what the private sector can do when the government gets out of the way. Well, conservative commentator Dennis Prager says the bigger the government, the smaller the citizen. And he's not wrong. You see, the founders of this country, they intended for a government to provide for the common defense, to establish the rule of law, to ensure that life, limb, and property were protected. But there are some things, though, that governments are designed for, yes, like fighting our nation's wars, establishing trade with foreign nations, protecting the vulnerable by means of police and fire departments, ensuring equal justice, enacting the laws through representative bodies of elected citizens. But I also believe, though, that the value of the private citizen, the private effort, is what makes this country so great. You see, when government is the first resort to take care of our basic daily needs, that's when bad things happen. More and more government means more and more regulation, stifling regulation. As government grows, it must justify its existence and prove to the world that life cannot exist without it, right? And for those who still try to produce, to thrive, to create, the government too often believes it must have more from you, while also creating more regulations to tell you how, when, and where you'll provide for the government so the government can give to those entitled individuals who've chosen the government as their first resort. Look, I don't want the U.S. to be a mediocre country. I don't. We should never desire to be a nation of low-level producers who reach out to government all the time for the next stimulus check, the next handout, the next excuse why they don't have to work. A nation where productivity is stymied by so many regulations that folks just give up trying. Where taxation becomes so onerous that people choose not to even try to produce just to avoid the government reaching in their wallets again. And in that vein, I don't want a government that is so big and so entitled with its own existence that the people that work in our government don't feel the need to justify their existence every day by entering a simple email. Only self-entitled bureaucrats would find things like that offensive, and they have apparently with DOGE. But really, if we get down to the point that people cannot exist without government, it's only going to be because we've forgotten that government actually cannot survive without the people. Then we are just like that proverbial self-licking ice cream cone, just existing for the never-ending loop of mediocrity, living off what the government gives us while in turn feeding an ever-growing government. The bottom line is this, y'all. Government should exist solely to ensure that liberty survives. Government should free up the private citizen to be able to build the better mousetrap, to set the parameters for national growth, to make options available, not mandates. Liberal progressives, they believe that American spirit is a myth, that government always knows best, that you exist for the benefit of government, not the other way around. Liberal progressives believe that government should always be the first resort when you face a personal hardship, not your family or your church or your community, and certainly not your own self-determination. Well, look, for the past few years, we've lived under more government regulation and interaction with our personal lives than perhaps ever in the history of our nation. But like so many of you listening, I'm a conservative, and I believe in limited government. Limited government that allows freedom of movement. One that sets the stage for success and then steps back and applauds when the private sector knocks another one out of the park. Look, I believe in the satisfaction that comes from enduring, from creating, from achieving, from trying, failing, trying again, and succeeding through effort, real effort, not big government entitlements or stifling regulations. So in reality, yeah, it's stories like the Chilkoot Pass, men who actually cut stairs into a mountainside. It's stories like Mr. Goddard, who actually took the boat apart, hauled the boat up the hill on his back, and then put it back in the water and sailed people downriver to find gold. Look, if government wants to survive, then the private sector has to thrive. And y'all, it's amazing what can happen when government actually gets out of the way. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.